presence this morning. Well, good morning, Red Chapel. Are you enjoying these last few sweltering hot days of SoCal before your children all go back to school? Summer's almost over, and we're almost through with this series that we started a few months ago called Rhyme and Reason. And every summer at Red Chapel, we take a book of the Bible. We don't always do our teaching this way, but during the summer, we take one book of the Bible, and we just dive deep, and we explore as much truth as we can take in, kind of like a big water fountain for a couple of months. And so last year, we did a series in the book of Psalms, and we called it our summer playlist. And the book of Psalms is kind of like the songbook of the church. Many of the songs that we sing today have been written from the book of Psalms. And then this summer, we decided to go through the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs. Actually, the next book over in your Bible is the next book over from the book of Psalms. And the book of Proverbs is amazing. It's this book full of insight, of wisdom, about our practical everyday life. It's written primarily by a man who's considered to be the wisest man that has ever lived in all of history. He was granted one wish by God, and his wish was that God would give him wisdom. And God did that. God filled his life with wisdom. And he wrote about it. He wrote about it in the book of Proverbs. 31 chapters. And it's full of, a lot of times, just these short sayings that have such powerful truths. And we've just kind of like been traveling through the book of Proverbs. And today we're going to jump into one particular proverb. Before we do, I thought I would share some information. Some of you may be aware of this. How many know Pamela Anderson and Kid Rock? I know that's an interesting way to start off a sermon. You probably weren't expecting that today. Pamela Anderson and Chris Rock. They were married for 122 days. That's about 4 months before they filed for divorce. Some of you may know Lisa Marie Presley and Nicolas Cage. Even shorter, they were married for 107 days. And they ended their marriage with this quote. They said, "We shouldn't have been married in the first place. So it didn't take them long to figure out, I guess, that they just weren't meant to be. Some of you recently remember Kim Kardashian and Chris Humphries, the NBA player, spent $10 million on their wedding for it to last 72 days. Pamela Anderson, again, she's done this a couple of times. You may remember her and Rick Solomon. They went to Vegas, got married, and then they filed for divorce 60 days later. 60 days later, they had irreconcilable differences. They didn't want to really take that much time to work through their differences, apparently. Drew Barrymore and Jeremy Thomas, he was an L.A. owner of a bar, and they got together, they got married. They only dated for about 6 weeks. Their marriage didn't even last that long, 39 days. Like, we're really getting down here. Like, 39 days that Drew Barrymore and Jeremy lasted. Carmen Electra and the infamous Dennis Rodman. He's quite a colorful guy. They made it for a whopping 9 days. 9 days. Carmen Electra, Dennis Rodman. And then, are you ready for the shortest celeb marriage in all of history? This one saddens me to tell you. She was one of my childhood favorites. I'm getting emotional. I'm just kidding. Britney Spears and Jason Alexander got married in Vegas after a night of partying. Their marriage lasted a long and happy 55 hours before they just decided to call it quits. I don't think anybody here that is married would deny that marriage is hard. It's difficult. It takes a lot of work to make marriage last. It requires a lot of attention to care, to keep healthy and happy. And sadly, sometimes people are just not willing to put in the work. And these celebrities may have taken it to the extreme, but the statistics in America for divorce are always a bit shocking to take a look at. They say that between 40 and 50% of first marriages end in divorce. And if you've studied this, you know that subsequent marriages begin to fizzle out even a lot faster because marriage is hard. Let me say it this way, because I'm not just talking to people that are married today. Relationships are hard. Relationships are difficult. There's so much work that's involved. Sonny and I have been married going on, we're going on 20 years now. We've been married for 19 years in June. 19 years Sonny and I have been married, and I don't know everything there is to know about marriage, but this one thing I know about marriage is hard. Marriage takes a lot of work. It's selfless, and it requires you giving a lot out, and it's difficult. There's so much compromise and selflessness involved in a successful marriage. So you might ask yourself, then why even bother to get married? Why even bother? If it's that much work, if it's that difficult, if I got a 50-50 chance of it even working out, why even bother to get married? Well, if you take a look all the way back in the book of Genesis, we see that when God created Adam, he's the first man, and he looks around at the end of his 7 days, 6 days of creation, he says, everything is good. I mean, he's looking at his masterpiece. God has just spoke the world into existence, and he sees that everything is good, except for one thing. The only thing that he didn't put his final stamp of approval on in the creation process was that he notices that man is alone. And here's what you need to know this morning is that God did not create us to be alone. Community and communion with others is an important part of human thriving. So whether it's in marriage or in community, our love for others and living in proximity to others, this is essential to a healthy life. In fact, sometimes this is literally essential for living. In fact, historically and in biblical times, a single woman or a widowed woman would starve to death if she wasn't married. And so, in fact, God in the Old Testament, thousands of years ago, God created rules for Israel, his chosen people, concerning marrying widows, taking care of widows, to make sure that they would be included in community and that they would be cared for. And in our modern time, this isn't so much of an issue, but the reality is that when we are not in a stable, loving, emotional relationship or community, essentially when we have this lack of attachment to others, we will begin to die, if no other reason, no other way, emotionally. Emotionally, they've done studies, babies that do not experience love and attachment to a constant caregiver are more likely to die as infants or to be sickly throughout the rest of their lives. Children that have been found in homes that are not stable, though they may have been sheltered, they may have had food, they may have had a roof over their head. Oftentimes, children in foundling homes, they regularly die from sadness. In fact, I was doing some research this week and reading a book called Hold Me Tight. And in there, they cited that in the 1930s and 40s, in the halls of American hospitals, orphan children who were deprived only of touch and emotional contact were, as the author wrote, dying in droves. Because we were wired, we had this innate need for emotional connection, emotional comfort. And then romantic love, as you get older in life, romantic love is all about this attachment, about this emotional bonding. It was about our wired in need to have someone who can offer reliable emotional connection and comfort. So essentially you are emotionally attached to and depending on your partner in much the same way that a child is on a parent for nurturing, soothing, and protection. So you just carry this emotional need for connection and comfort from being a baby through your childhood, which oftentimes is met through your parents or your caregivers, and then you kind of roll that over into these more romantic relationships, ultimately into marriage, where many of your needs are being met in this context. I remember I learned this the hard way when Sonia and I got married. If you ask Sonia about her first year of marriage, and you ask me, you'll get two completely different answers. I thought it was amazing. I was on a high. I didn't come out much. We didn't go very many places. We were stuck in a house most of the time. And man, so many of my needs were being met within this relationship. And meanwhile, Sonia will tell you that in her first year of marriage, she was starving. Literally, we're living together, and she is alone. I was all about a little less talk, and a lot more action, if you know what I mean. She needed someone to, if you know my wife, she's her love language is quality time. She needed somebody to talk to. She wanted to have quality talks, right? And I really wasn't into that. And what I didn't understand at that time, I remember that first year, is that many of her needs were not being met in the context of our relationship. And I'm saying all this to tell you that attachment and love are necessities to human flourishing. And I know society has trivialized love. It's taken this flippant approach to it. Marriage means nothing. Dating is equated to just sleeping around. And even children are kind of being pawned off to nannies. They're crammed into after school scheduled programs. And so you've probably figured it out by now. But this week, I want to spend a few minutes of our time talking about real love. About real love. And Solomon, the wisest man to have ever lived, actually had a lot to say about love. But one particular proverb that he wrote that stuck out to me says this. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 3 says, "Don't lose your grip on love and loyalty. Tie them around your neck. Crave their initials on your heart." Here is Solomon, the author of the book of Proverbs, reminding us about the importance of love and loyalty. And I love the way he phrases it. He says, "Don't lose your grip." Don't lose your grip on love and loyalty. He's telling us that love and loyalty is something that is so critical. It's so vital, as we've just talked about for a few minutes. It's so important to a healthy, flourishing life that you've got to hold on to it at all costs. That's what I want to talk to you for a few minutes about today, is get a grip on love and loyalty. Love and loyalty. Loyalty, I think, is a fairly easy word for us to define, for us to understand today. We all understand loyalty, right? Loyalty says that I'm with you no matter what. Loyalty stays when everyone else walks away. Loyalty doesn't just jump on bandwagons, for all of you sports fans, right? Some of you that have been fans of those teams that you have not enjoyed success in a long time, but the loyal fans, those that are loyal, they stick with even when your team is not winning. That's what loyalty is. Loyalty doesn't just jump from one bandwagon. You know, I know a lot of Laker fans have popped up over the summer. Come on. Yeah, all of a sudden they coming out. They haven't been around for a couple of years. But now all of a sudden you're starting to see the Laker banners and bumper stickers. But some of us, we just been loyal. Post-Kobe era, you know what I'm saying? We stuck with the Lakers. Now we got LeBron, we got AD, we got a little crew, we got something working now. But that's what loyalty is that you're the number one fan no matter what. No matter the circumstances, loyalty says, I am sticking with you. And so I think we have a pretty good premise of what loyalty is. But our understanding of love, I think, is a little more elusive. In our society, the one that is full of divorce and lust and infidelity and just do what you want on the whim, I think we've forgotten what love is really all about. So before I get into holding our grip on love and loyalty, I want to give you an amazing definition of what love is, so you understand what I'm talking about this morning. And the best definition of love comes from the Bible, right? Not pop culture, what they have to say about it, not what some of these famous celebrities have to say about love, not maybe something you've seen written, all those may be good. The best definition of love comes right from the scripture, and it's Paul writes this letter to the church in Corinth, and he gives us this amazing definition of love. He says, so no matter what I say, first off, he says, no matter what I say, what I believe, what I do, he says, I'm bankrupt without love. And so Paul here is even reiterating the importance of love, the necessity of love. In fact, before this, he lists all these amazing spiritual feats that he could do and that he could write about and that could happen in his life. But he says, all those are meaningless. In fact, he says, without love, I am bankrupt. No wonder why Solomon tells us, you've got to get a grip on love and loyalty. And then he tells us what love is. He says, love never gives up. Love cares more for others than for self. Love doesn't want what it doesn't have. We're going to get into that in a few moments. Love isn't always, it's not always this attitude of me first. It doesn't keep score of the sins of others. Any of you have ever done that in a relationship, right? Like you got a scorecard. You got the scoreboard of keeping track of who has offended each other more than the other person. But love doesn't keep the score of the sins of others. It's forgiving. Love doesn't revel when others grovel. We could just do a whole sermon this morning and talk about the definition of love. Love puts up with anything. Love trusts God always. Real love. Love always looks for the best. It never looks back. It keeps going to the end. I love how he concludes this definition of love, and he's really tying it into what Solomon calls love and loyalty. It never looks back. It keeps going to the end. Love never dies. So Paul's telling us that love, contrary to maybe popular opinion, it's not just this flutter in your stomach. It's not just this romantic feeling that you get, and that's all part of it, but it's more than that. It's deeper than that. Love goes deep. It goes wide. It's selfless. Love is often so much more than what we think about it. And Solomon is telling us that we're to never lose our grip on love and loyalty. And I love how he pairs these words together, love and loyalty. He essentially is saying that love and loyalty are synonymous. That love and loyalty, maybe I could say it like this, love and loyalty are not mutually exclusive, right? If you have one, you have the other. So I want to spend a couple of minutes taking a look at a few ways that I think we can combat the things that cause us to lose our grip on love and loyalty. I want to say this at the beginning, that real love, the kind of love that Paul describes, the kind of love that is essential to human flourishing, that kind of love is worth fighting for. That kind of love is worth fighting for. And so the first thing I would tell you this morning, write this down. If you're taking notes, write this down, is simply this, is hold on. Hold on. Don't lose your grip on love and loyalty. Hold on. My wife and I, for our fitness schedule, we took up CrossFit a couple of years ago. And CrossFit's got all kinds of crazy movements, and it's had a bad rap for people getting injured, and people probably do. So I'm not here to advocate for you to go to CrossFit. But one of the movements in CrossFit that I hate the most is rope climbs. How many of you have ever done rope climbs? Right? A few of you? And it's one fact. In fact, I told the coach a couple of weeks ago, I said, I'm done with rope climbs. I'm not doing rope climbs anymore because I feel like it beats me up, and I'm done with it. There's other ways that I can get in the same exercise, work the same muscles. It's difficult, especially if you're out of shape and you weigh a little more than maybe you should, and you're climbing up a rope, and it's so tempting to let go. In fact, it becomes very, sometimes they'll program 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 rope climbs in a workout. And I mean, it's tough. You're number one, you're holding your entire weight up. You're pulling yourself up. Some people do what they call legless rope climbs. I'm not that good yet. I can't do that. But even with the help of like pushing yourself up, you begin to lose your grip. I've got calluses on my hands from rope climbs. One of the ladies the other day, we were doing rope climbs, and she's getting her first rope climb down, and she gets to the top, and she looks down, and she remembers that she's scared of heights. And she is literally holding on for dear life. The one thing you don't want to do in a rope climb is you don't want to let go, or you don't even want to slightly lose your grip. You don't want your hands gliding down that rope. And that's what I mean today when it comes to relationships. When you find a relationship, when you find real love, and I don't mean just a marriage, I mean maybe it's in a friendship. When you find a real love, it's something that you want to hold on to. This is the kind of holding on that is so important if we're not to lose our grip on love and loyalty. It's the kind of love that lasts the entire ride, right? Because love is a long game. And when you made a commitment to your spouse, you said something like, until death do us part, that you were just going to hold on, that you were going to hold on. And you repeated those vows back to one another, because that's what love is. Love is about the long game. When you brought a child into this world, you promised that you would love them forever and always, no matter what. Even they were going through the terrible twos, you love them anyways. Even when we're experiencing this, even when they got into those teenage years, right? You just smile. You love them no matter what. You hold on. You hold on. You hold on. It's the long game. It's the long game. You hold on. Some of you have best friends. I remember my daughter a few years ago, we were on a trip and she wanted to get something for her best friend. She got a little necklace. It was two halves of a necklace, and it was BFF. So some of you remember childhood. Some of you still have some of those friendships, because you found love that was worth fighting for. And I would tell you to hold on. Holding on in a relationship. You know this, if you're married or you've had a close relationship, holding on isn't always easy. Holding on isn't always fun, right? It isn't always exciting. At times it can become boring just holding on. It can become frustrating, or sometimes even both, just holding on. It's kind of like, what do you do when the new car smell wears off, right? And that's what happens in relationships, right? That first year of marriage, man, I am living on a high. I'm so happy. But then things, if you're not careful, it can get monotonous. It can get boring. It can get frustrating. So what does it look like holding on? Holding on. Proverbs, Solomon, he writes about this in Proverbs chapter 5, a little bit later in Proverbs chapter 5. He says, do you know the saying, drink from your own rain barrel, draw water from your own spring-fed well? It's true. Otherwise, you may one day come home and find your barrel empty, your well polluted. Your spring water is for you and you only. If you haven't figured that out, he's talking about your relationships. Not to be passed around among strangers. Bless your fresh flowing fountain. And here he really gets to what he's talking about. He says, enjoy your wife, the wife that you married as a young man. She's lovely as an angel. She's beautiful as a rose. Solomon's going to tell you how you hold on. How you hold on when it's boring, when it's monotonous, when it's tiring. He says, don't ever quit taking delight in her body. Never take her love for granted. Have you ever caught yourself doing that, taking a relationship for granted? Never take it for granted. Why would you trade enduring intimacies for cheap thrills with a whore? For dalliance with a promiscuous stranger? You know, this is the way you hold on. He says, don't ever quit taking delight in her body. Never take love for granted. I think Solomon in some ways was saying, learn to see your relationship in new and fresh ways. That it's up to you to attend well to your spouse, to your loved one, to your child. It's up to you to find ways to delight in them. Sonia and I, we made up our mind from the very beginning that when we got married and we said our vows to one another, that they were going to last forever. Going on 19 years, we've had amazing times, we've had rough times, we've had the same highs and lows that every relationship has. And so practically, to what our holding on look like, one of the ways that we practically express this, and you've heard me say this before, is we've always said that we'll never say the D word in our relationship. The D word you're thinking of is a different one. We've always said that we would never say the word divorce in our relationship. I'm just telling you practically what it looks like for us to hold on, right? And what this did is it did a couple things for us. Number one is it just like it secured our commitment to one another. And the other thing that it did for me is I've just made up my mind that I'm going to live life to the fullest, that I'm going to enjoy life, that I don't want to be in a relationship with somebody that the only reason that we're together is because we won't divorce. And so what it forced me to do is to be to look at our relationship in fresh and exciting and creative ways, right? It's kind of like Andy Grammer sings that song, fresh eyes, fresh eyes. I can't sing. I need Anthony up here. God, if I could sing as good as him, oh, Lord. Listen to the song from Fresh Eyes by Andy Grammer. He says, so suddenly I'm in love with a stranger, right? He's learning to see that person in a new way every day. I can't believe that she's mine. I told Sunday that just yesterday. We've been married 19 years. You'd think I know everything there is to know about her. Seen her in every way, and I told her, man, we were driving to go get some pie hole, some ice cream and pie last night at like 9:30. So I was feeling really happy and excited. And I just looked over and said, babe, I can't believe you're mine. I'm so lucky. I told her, you're the most amazing wife. I watch the way that you are with our kids. You're the most amazing mother. I watch how hard you work. You've pursued your degree. I watch you helping people. I see your love outflowing for people. And I just tried to look at her with fresh eyes. This is how you hold on. This is how you keep from getting distracted, right? Or as Solomon said, this is how you keep from drawing from another well. You enjoy the well that you have. You enjoy the water that you have been gifted. And so you hold on. And I can tell you, holding on, marriage, it's like fine wine. It really is. It gets better with time. If you'll hold on, if you just hold on, you'll find that marriage and relation, any relationships, if you hold on, they get better with time. The second way that you can get a grip on love and loyalty is, number one, to hold on. Number two is to hold tight. Maybe you could ask yourself this question this morning. How tight is your grip on love and loyalty? I was watching this lady the other day at CrossFit, and I'm looking up at her. She is holding on. She does not want to come down. I mean, she's going to have to come down at some point. She's holding on. She got down, and she told me, I forgot. I'm scared of heights. And just think, you know, those knuckles are turning white. You know, sometimes you're losing your circulation in your fingers. And this is the way that we hold on to love and loyalty. You hold it tight. You hold your relationships tight. You hold your family tight. You hold your marriage tight. You hold what is, here's another way to look at it. You hold what is valuable tight. You hold it tight. It's different. This is different than just holding on for dear life. When you use this phrase, holding tight, you're talking about protecting something that is valuable to you. What's valuable in your, what relationships are valuable in your life? I would tell you this morning, Solomon said, you got to hold those tight. Don't lose focus on your relationship. Don't lose focus on your marriage. Don't lose focus on your family. The things that are most valuable in your life are worth holding tight on to. I remember when Megan was first born, and that's my first child. She's 15 going on 16 now. But I remember when Megan was first born, and I loved having babies, but I'm really scared to hold babies. I don't know why. Babies are, to me, when I see babies, they're so fragile. I'm always afraid I'm going to drop them. I realize how, and I remember there when Megan was being born, and we rushed in for Sonia had to have a surgery, C-section to have Megan, and so I was kind of flustered. I was worried. I was freaked out, to be honest with you. And I remember when Megan came out, the nurse immediately goes to hand Megan to me. And in that moment, I realized, this is my baby. This is my child. We've been praying for this baby. And I remember when she handed me that baby, and I remember being like, I was kind of freaked out. I was like, oh my God, because, you know, they're a mess. If you've seen a baby when they come out, they're a disaster. They're a mess. They're really slippery. There's all kinds of stuff. It's just gross. There's all kinds of stuff. And I remember like, oh my God, I can't drop. Sonia's not even there to help me. Like, literally, they just pumped her full with whatever. And I remember right as they hand me, I look over and I'm like, oh my God, look, babe. And she's like, and she was gone. She's in La La Land, man, just gone. I'm by myself. Here she is, and I'm like, but I realize, like, oh, my God, this is something that's so valuable to me. and I held her babies, you hold them different, right? You have to support their neck a certain way. You have to hold them a certain way. And I made up my mind that it wasn't just in that moment with Megan. But Megan was valuable. She was something that's very valuable, and I was going to do my best to hold her tight, that I was going to protect her to this day. It's a little different. I do it with a shotgun now. Any guys try to come out, but I'm protecting my baby. I'm probably, Sonia and I, we get accused of being overprotective with our children, but we just live this way because I realize how valuable. I realize that relationships are like this. Relationships can honestly, they can be fragile. You've got to be careful with them, especially the ones that you find that are worth fighting for. And so you hold them tight. You protect the things that are most valuable to you. Think about the care and consideration we take with something that is of great value. Think about a vintage car, right? Some of you are like, okay, I can relate now. Kids, I was like, nah, I'm not sure. My wife, but you talk about that old car I've got. Right? Think about that vintage car. Think about how vintage is valuable, right? Vintage cars today, they're worth more today than what you paid for them 30 and 40 years ago. Kind of like relationships, they just get better with time. Sonia and I, our relationship is coming up on vintage. Like, we're almost at 20 years, but it's true. They become more valuable. But if you don't spend the time with them, they can lose their value. Think about the vintage car. It can rust, right? It can break down. The leather seats can crack. The paint can chip. And it's only valuable if you put the work needed into it to maintain its value. But if you protect what's valuable, it'll appreciate more than you ever thought. Like, there's people that paid $500-$600 for a 65 Mustang that if they kept it in good condition, if they protected it, if they valued it. They never imagined that car today would go worth $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And I'm telling you, when it comes to love, when it comes to relationships, the ones that are valuable, if you'll protect them, if you'll put the work in, if you don't let the paint chip, if you don't let the leather crack, if you'll put the work into maintaining it, I promise you, I can tell you this now from some experience. It gets more valuable over time. And so no wonder why Solomon says, don't lose your grip on love and loyalty. So I would tell you this morning to hold tight. Jesus told us, he said, this explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife. And the two are united into one. And since they are no longer two but one, watch this. You think that car is valuable? You think that vintage, whatever suitcase or dress or whatever dresser that you got is valuable? Jesus said, what God has joined together, let no one split apart. You hold it tight. You protect it. You protect those of us that are married, you protect your marriage, right? You don't let someone else come in and tear it apart. You protect it. You protect what you watch. You protect who you hang around, right? You protect who you spend time with. You protect it. You protect it. Don't let anyone separate. Don't let anyone split apart what God has joined together. Hold it tight. And then finally, the last way to combat the things that would loosen our grip on love and loyalty, write this down. Hold on. Hold tight. Number three is hold fast. Hold fast. There are times when it feels like love and loyalty are trying to rip themselves out of your hands. In fact, sometimes it feels like this gigantic tug of war. You're holding on, but the other side is jerking, it's tugging, it's ripping the rope from your hands. Think about the unexpected sickness that comes out of nowhere, right? It's like jerking that rope out of your hands. And if you've been in a relationship very long, you've experienced things like this. Think about an incredibly tough time in your relationship where there was betrayal or lies that crept into the relationship. There's another yank on the rope trying to rip love and loyalty out of your hands. Think about times, rough times, when maybe there was a loss of a job. Maybe you lost your house. Maybe there was a loss of a family member. There's some of the worst things that can come out of nowhere that try to rip love and loyalty out from under your grip. These are the moments that we've got to hold on fast so that love and loyalty do not get ripped out of our hands. In other words, there are times in your there are storms that are going to come into your relationship. There's going to be rough times, right? When the seas get rough in your relationships, it's time to tie the hatches down. It's time to hold fast. Remember, we promised our spouse, we said that we would stay in sickness and in health, in the seen and the unseen, and then the unforeseen. And so we must hold fast. You've got to know that there's going to be times when the whole world, it seems like, is trying to rip love and loyalty from your grip. You've got to hold fast. You've got to hold. This is where you're holding on for dear life. Just imagine yourself on the storms of life. And everything is swaying. Sometimes it feels like the carpet's being pulled out from underneath your feet. And you're losing your footing. Hold fast. Hold fast. You hold on for dear. That's why Solomon, this is what Solomon's telling us. Don't lose your grip on love and loyalty. On love and loyalty. Love and loyalty. I understand this morning that this is a lot easier said than done. Some of us maybe don't know what it looks like to hold on, to hold tight, to hold fast. Maybe you weren't raised in a home where you've seen this on display. Maybe you come from broken. So many of us have suffered. Maybe you're raised in a broken home. Maybe your parents didn't last. Or maybe some of you have been the victims of broken relationships. You're here today and somehow the relationship got away from you. Or maybe the other person just let go. And today you're here and you're suffering the brokenness. There's severed friendships. There's fractured relationships. There's hurt that comes from that. Some of you know what it's like to lose relationships, and you're saying, how do I learn to hold on? How do I learn to hold tight? How do I learn, Pastor, to hold fast on the storms of life? And thankfully, we're not left alone to figure that out. Real love, the scriptures say that God is love. So I'm telling you, when you find real love, it's worth fighting for. True love. And the scriptures tell us the very definition is that God is love. That he encapsulates each of these things that we've been talking about this morning about love. That he holds on to us. That he plays the long game with us. That he's committed to us. He holds on. That he holds tight to us. You may or may not know this morning. Or fully believe this today, but you are very valuable to God. Like God's doing everything he can to protect us, to protect our relationship with us. He holds tight to us. If ever there was the most beautiful definition of what it looks like to hold fast, it's the definition of God's love towards us that God holds. He doesn't just hold on. He doesn't just hold tight and protect us, but I'm thankful this morning, and I can tell you this from years of experience, that I serve a God, that you serve a God that he holds fast. That even though I make mistakes, even though I have failed, I've made mistakes, that he holds fast. I can tell you through the storms of life, God did not abandon me. He did not leave me when I needed him most. He wasn't nowhere to be found. God holds fact, this is what you need to know about the love of God. Paul describes it this way. He says, I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from God's love. Nothing. Maybe you don't know what it's like to have a relationship that's worth fighting for. But I want to tell you today that you can enter into a relationship where you'll find true love. Love from somebody that will never lose his grip on you. Look what Paul says. This is what I know. He says, I'm convinced. This is the one thing I know. I am convinced. He's convinced, not just because he read about it. If you study the life of Paul, he's been through so much in his life. And he says, I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from God's love. Neither death, nor life, angels, or demons, our fears for today, nor our worries about tomorrow. Not even, listen to what Paul says, not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love. Somebody needs to hear this morning. Nothing can separate you from the love of God. What a beautiful display of getting a grip on love and loyalty displayed by God towards us. That nothing can separate us. Nothing. Some of you may be feeling like today you're not worthy of His love. You don't deserve this type of love. Nothing. Nothing. Not your fears. There's nothing you can do. You need to understand this morning. There is nothing that you can do to separate yourself from the love of God. That's why you're here today. Because God loves you, that He's passionate about you. You don't have to live in fear or worry. Maybe you have been in other relationships that were fragile, that were easily severed or fractured, but there's a relationship you can have with God that you don't have to worry about whether He's going to be there tomorrow, whether He's going to leave you, whether you're going to upset Him or offend Him and fracture the relationship. This is the kind of love that we've got to anchor ourselves. In fact, until you can experience this type of love, you'll never be able to exhibit this type of love. And it's a necessity that you come into a relationship with this loving God. If you do, the outflow will be you'll have healthy relationships with your spouse, with your family, with your children, with your friends, with your coworkers. If you can discover the type of love that only comes from God, I want you to stand this morning. Maybe you've lost your grip on love. Maybe you've lost love. Maybe today you're hopeless. Maybe today you've given up on love. Maybe you've neglected love for too long. Maybe you found yourself letting go when times got tough. I want you to know today that God is love. That God is love. And today, He wants a relationship with you. That there is someone that'll hold on. There is someone that values you enough today to hold tight, to protect the relationship that He wants to have with you. That there is someone today, that there is a loving God that is here today, that He's going to hold fast. Maybe you find yourself in one of those seasons of life today where the storms are raging, the battle is fierce, the voices are loud, and there's so much going on in your life, and you find yourself shaken, you find yourself in an unstable place in life today. I want you to know there is a God that's going to hold fast, that your situations don't intimidate Him, that He's not going to neglect you, that you haven't offended Him too much, you haven't sinned too great. There is a God that is going to hold fast. Father, just thank You today for Your unconditional love. It's really hard to even understand or imagine the type of love that you have for us this morning. The kind of love that holds on. I thank you, God, that you held on to me. That you've held tight. That you found us valuable. That you saw worth in us that maybe others couldn't see. That you saw that and you held tight, and especially, God, the kind of love that you have displayed that holds fast. And today, God, you know that there are people here this morning that need to encounter this type of love. This type of love. That no matter what's going on in their life today, that they can anchor themselves to you. That you're not going anywhere. You're not going to leave them. You're not going to abandon them. You're not going to give up on them. You're not going to lose your grip on them. But let us, help us, God, to not only understand, but to experience today the type of unconditional love that only you can offer us this morning. Would you do that today? Would you just allow God to extend that kind of love to you this morning? Would you allow him to wrap his arms around you today? Don't brush them aside. Don't brush them aside today. Come on, welcome in the love of God into your life this morning. The type of love that can heal you of the brokenness that you may have experienced. The type of love that can mend the fractured relationship that you have today. The broken heart that you have this morning. There is a love. There is a love. There is a love that today can heal you. Make you healthy. Make you whole today. As we sing this last worship song this morning, would you allow yourself today to experience unconditional love?